All right. Well, so what we wanted to do now is give you guys a chance. We're going to take just a couple minutes here. And if you had questions based on something that Keith said, either you weren't quite sure what he was getting at or you wanted to go a little bit deeper. So we're just going to open it up. And you can ask, and then I'll repeat it for, you know, the recording. But who's got to question?
But not everybody at the same time, because it's hard to hear when you're talking over one
another. It really is. Yes, Zach.
Yeah.
So he was asking the thing that you very clearly heard right there, because you were right there. So why did God put the tree in the garden at all?
Yeah, sure. Well, I was trying to... I was trying to say earlier, the first talk, that the tree isn't what really what matters. It's that humans had to have some way of showing that they believe that God is out for their good. They had to have a way to express that. So to create beings with free will. If God values love above everything, which I believe he does, then he creates a universe where love is possible. And love cannot be forced. So Jews that were coming out of the concentration camps of World War II said that the Gestapo guards, the Nazi guards, they were able to force us to do anything. They made us turn on one another, our family members. They made us eat our own feces. They said there was one thing they couldn't make us do, and that was love them. It can't be forced. It has to be freely chosen. And if love is a possibility, choosing good and love is a possibility, the opposite has to also be possible. So the tree is, whether it was a literal tree in a garden or whether this is a theological telling that is dripping with truth, that represents a boundary that God set for humans to be able to express whether or not they want to go on this journey with God, whether or not they trust him. So that's how I understand it. And by the way, I tell my students this all the time. 25% of what I say and teach is wrong. My problem is I don't know what that 25% is. I study hard. I pray hard. I dialogue so I can know truth. But at the end of the day, I hold these things loosely with a lot of passion, but I hold them loosely. Because I know I don't have everything right. Kelly Brown Douglas says, you ought to do theology the way that you do a crossword puzzle. Always use a pencil, because to use a pen is arrogant. Sometimes you have to erase the answers that you had. And sometimes you just have to leave it blank. Sometimes you just have to live with the questions. So this next question, I'm not even going to respond. I'm going to go.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Who's got another one? Oh, there we go. Thanks. Oh, Laura. Yeah, sorry.
What's your name? Laura? Laura. And what was your name? Zach? Okay. Yeah, he turned into me. Yeah. How do you think I knew that detail about the banana split?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
I'm not even sure how to summarize that, so I'm just not even going to take a shot
at it. How do you live as a pleasure seeker as a Christian? Great. I love the question. Here's a great little maybe this will hit home because you're in college and you guys have what's come to be known as hormones. So when I lived in England for a year, worked at a church over in England, took a gap year in between my call. I went to Baylor for my undergrad, took a gap year, went over, worked at a church in North England. That's where I got into DJing. So every like third friend of mine had DJ decks in their home, and I loved it. So I got into DJing. I hung out with these friends. It was at this church that I was working at, and we loved to go dancing. We loved to go out, and so on Sunday nights after church, we would go to this little bar/club to salsa dance, because you moved to England to salsa dance. No. So we'd go to this little, and I couldn't salsa dance, but we'd do our little thing. And I'm just for that, I'm putting on some Cuban music here in a minute when we dance. And at the end of the evening, some of my friends have gone home. There's one or two that are left, and I'm going over to get, I'm working it, so I'm sweating. So I'm going over to get some water at the bar. And I look across, and there's this girl who's looking at me, a radiant face. And she starts coming right for me, and she's hot. She is very attractive, and she's coming, walking straight at me, and I'm looking, and she comes over, and she goes, excuse me, would you like to have sex? I went, wickety what? It sounds like, wait, what did you say? You know, salsa, you know, it's music. It sounded like you, do you want to have sex? And I said, No, I don't. I'm a follower of Jesus, and so that's not how it works for me. So no, I'm sorry. And she goes, "Oh, you're a Christian? So am I." She goes, "Listen, my mom gave me this cross. Look, I wear it." And I'm like, "Wow, okay." And she's like, "Yeah, my mom gave it to me when I was young. I've been wearing it ever since." I'm like, "Wow, okay, cool. It's great that you wear a cross." Yeah, and so we talk for a moment, and then she gets through, and she goes, "Okay, so do you want to have sex or not?" And I said, "No, I'm sorry," and I walked away. The reason that I said no, wasn't married at the time, reason I said that I said no, I don't want to have sex, is not because I didn't think it would be enjoyable and feel good. It's not because I want to be a really good person, and I didn't want that to mark against me. It's not because I'd be ashamed of other people knowing. In fact, I'm pretty sure no one would. I could have taken off. I'm pretty sure no one would have found out. I'm living in a different country. The reason I said no is because I do not want to settle for anything less than the fullness of joy. And when Scripture talks about reserving sexual expression for the covenant relationship of marriage, it is not arbitrary. God is not just loving, he's also logical. And when he gives a command, when he gives a boundary, it is for our good. It comes down to the question of the garden. Do we believe that God is more about our good than we are? And there's a book that I read a few years ago titled Hooked. So H-O-O-K-E-D, written by two neurologists. I don't know what faith persuasion or background they're coming from, but they were writing about recent studies in brain imaging that that goes around. They found that through brain imaging in the last decade, they see that during sexual expression, two chemicals are released, one primarily in males, one primarily in females, and that the underlying purpose of these chemicals is to bond you. They're bonding agents. And so it gets released during sexual expression with whoever you're with. You wonder why humans, I think we might only get to two questions. you wonder why humans... Only animals that Only animals that experience orgasm while looking into each other's eyes. And so these two neurologists are writing about this, and they say, what's interesting, what we've found is this Velcro effect, these bonding agents, these chemicals, and that the more that it is released, they've found that like Velcro, it loses its stickiness over time, and especially they found for men, that when men who have multiple sexual partners finally want to settle down and have, you know, with their spouse and have a family, they have found that it has lost its capacity to bond. Neurology confirming scripture. It's not arbitrary that God has given us. So you ask me, what does it mean to be a pleasure seeker? It means that in the words of Elton Trueblood, who is a Quaker theologian, Christians are those who firmly believe that Jesus was not wrong and that he shows us the deepest and rawest way to live. And I just want to throw this out there too, any time that such sensitive topics come up, I'd be a fool to not think that some of us don't have some checkered histories sexually. And if I can just say, when Jesus says, I am making all things new, he means that. That he can restore even you, no matter what your background is sexually, no matter what mistakes you've made.